Welcome to Forums for a Future. No, it's not 1960. It's nearly half a century later. But, once again, there are warnings of danger all over the land. It's time, once again, to reclaim a future that is free of war, racism, and poverty. A brighter future of promise and hope. I am Edward Renner, your host for a series of civic discussions, forums, if you will, toward creating a more viable future. The complete outline for the podcast series and all of the reference materials are available on the Forums for a Future homepage on my website at www.kerenner.com. It is not sufficient to complain about the present. One must also have a prescription for the future. Podcast number 16, Interpersonal and Public Tools for Change. Part 1 of my podcast series contains a brief 2-minute promotional and a conceptual foundation for thinking about change as the convergence of economic, political, social, and personal perspectives. Part 2 is a set of 4 podcasts providing a philosophy for the 21st century. Part 3 is a set of 4 podcasts describing 3 lessons from modern history on the interplay of power, wealth, and belief for informing the present. Part 4 contains 3 prescriptive principles for having a future. Part 5 describes 2 tools for change. Today, in podcast number 16, I will discuss the second of these 2 tools, those that are interpersonal and public. Today, the key concept is we have a unique interpersonal and public responsibility for the future that is the foundation for civic life and for the preservation of the democratic process. In the most simple and straightforward terms, Thomas Friedman laid out from an economic perspective that the world has fundamentally changed. Specifically, that the transition from December 31st, 1999 to January 1st, 2000, qualitatively, was a far bigger jump than just one day. His arguments make economic sense. Almost overnight, we entered a flat world. Globalization had taken hold. The challenge now is whether American workers will sink to the lower wage standard set by India and China in a global race to the bottom, or whether the rest of the world will be lifted to the higher American standard through endless growth. However, from an historical and social perspective, Jared Diamond sees collapse as the inevitable endpoint of the pursuit of endless growth. The difference, he argues, between the past and the present is that the collapse we now face is of the planet itself, not an isolated society here and there. Globalization is just that. It is a global context in which the human footprint is on the planet itself. Simply put, the planet will not support Friedman's economic solution. From a strictly economic perspective, Friedman's theory is rational until it bumps squarely into the absolute limits of endless growth as the endpoint of a social, not an economic, perspective. Finally, Gwen Dyer laid out the dimensions of the world political scene that are required to negotiate this clash between responding to the economic demands of a flat world with endless growth, with the real limits to growth. It is a formidable political task, but it is a task that the world had positioned itself to tackle through the United Nations by plotting, albeit ponderously, to avoid the worst of the Cold War. The United Nations had positioned itself, by the turn of this century, to extend its cooperative processes for world peace to the new economic challenges of a flat world. That process was abruptly interrupted by the United States with its invasion of Iraq and its unilateral war on terrorism. Now, the question for the future is whether that damage can be undone, or whether the United States has unleashed the greatest terror of all, of mortally destroying the very process that could save humankind from its worst fate of collapse, all in the name of democracy and Christian theology. From all three of these perspectives, it is time for intense civic discussions within the United States. Are we, as the most powerful nation in the world, going to set the tone for leading the economically globalized world toward a cooperative, democratic, nonviolent response to the real limits of growth? Or are we going to be the prime mover in taking out the entire planet in a doomsday pursuit under our God of the American way of life? A sobering quote from the Vietnam War was, "Unfortunately, we had to destroy the village in order to save it from communism." The modern equivalent for each of us in the United States is to consider in this new era the proposition, "Unfortunately, we had to destroy the planet in order to save it for unrestrained capitalism." Yes, it is time for intense civic discussions, both within our families and between us and our friends and associates from work and play. By civic discussions, I mean formally structured occasions when people who are known to each other and who share some common basis of association sit down together, face to face, and have serious exchanges about their collective future. Why family political forums? The concept of a generation gap is now dysfunctional. There is only one future, and it is the one shared by all of us who are alive today. If you are a young person, talk to your parents and grandparents. If you are an adult, talk to the young people in your family. Casual passing comments are not sufficient. We need to have the discussions with forethought in a structured setting in which there is a pre-established protocol. Forums are organized in advance with an agenda. Participants come with advance notice of what will be discussed, so there is time for thoughtful preparation. Forums have moderators, so the discussion is civil, focused, and orderly. This means the dialogue is free of loud domination by any one person. Forums discover and acknowledge the diversity of opinion within the group. These are political, civic discussions, because the primary goal of a forum is not unanimity, but rather hearing and acknowledging the range of issues and perspectives that must be accommodated. Families care about each other. They take care of each other despite differences of opinion. It is far easier to accommodate the needs and perspectives of someone you love and understand than it is a faceless stranger. The recognition and accommodation of differences is a process. It takes time. It takes the opportunity for follow-up conversations on what was started during the forum. Follow-up requires participants to share real time and space, to allow for the dialogue that reconciles differences, that deepens tolerance, and that dilutes one's own absolute truths to relative beliefs. This is a political process, and it has its roots in the community that is closest to our heart, our own family. There is no better place to begin than where understanding and accommodation of difference is deeply personal, and where continuity of the conversation is possible. Ultimately, it is the future of your son or daughter or your parents which is at issue. Each of us is in the same boat as every other member of our family. It is a common future, regardless of age, gender, or occupation. So why public political forums? Second only to family is our network of friends and associates with whom we share our play and work time. Although we share with each one of those only some specific community, a hobby, a fraternal organization, a vocation, or an apartment building, collectively, our circle of friends and associates encompass a wide range of experiences and histories. Unfortunately, politics are often off-limits as a topic for casual conversation, lest it open a divide that would intrusively corrupt the quality of the primary association. Yet our friends and associates are a rich source, one that need not be endangered by respectful efforts to learn about and understand their points of view about contemporary social issues. Forums offer conversationally safe harbors because of their formal, civil structure. A forum is respectful. Forums do not seek consensus, nor are they a debate. They are an open and forthright exchange in which participants have the opportunity to broaden their appreciation of each other by honestly answering questions and by respectfully listening to the answers of others. Such discussions make clear the range of accommodation and mutual respect that is required for the democratic process to work. A friend or associate will be given that mutual respect far more easily than an unknown person with a view contrary to our own. Democracy is not about winning. Democracy is a process for duly respecting the perspective of others. Such discussions can seldom achieve their outcome on the spot. The forums are simply a starting point for a process. They are a process that the interpersonal nature of the group allows to ripple forward into ongoing discussions. Forums are the start of a deeper sense of community. They are a modern replacement for the old green commons in the center of the village, where all of the residents ended up at various times in assorted combinations. Now, of course, with other means of communication, we are no longer dependent on a physical grass square in the center of the village. Rather, we each have many villages, often without common geography. With a little effort, the modern equivalent of the village green can enrich our civic life by providing continuity to the civic dialogue essential to the democratic process. However, perhaps the most important reason for public political forums is that they make us individually accountable for our beliefs. It is far harder to hold poorly formulated beliefs if they are openly exposed to public view. We are much more likely to act in responsible ways if what we think and do is known to our friends, associates, and neighbors. Interpersonal responsibility requires removing the veil from our private beliefs and actions and allowing them to be public. To be public is to be visible and accountable to our friends and associates, and for them to be likewise to us. The result is community. As a modern society, we have been in retreat from community, for which we have paid a heavy civic price. We cannot afford to continue that trend. One of the most devastating consequences of the Iraq War has been the silence of criticism. At the time of the invasion, to speak forthrightly about why the decision to invade was foolish, reckless, and ill-advised was to be portrayed at best as unpatriotic, and at worst as a real and present danger to America, no less than the terrorists themselves. Even today, 6 years later, there is reluctance, even among the current Democratic presidential hopefuls, to simply say this was a terrible mistake. We desperately need a modern equivalent of a green commons in which the essential civic discussions take place freely, openly, and continuously. Sample material for organizing either a family or a public political forum may be downloaded from the Forums for a Future homepage at www.kerenner.com. That is www.kerenner.com. From this homepage, select Forums for a Future and go to podcast number 16. Here, there is a direct link to a WinZip folder for both family and public political forums. Each folder contains 7 editable files that may be freely copied and adapted for local use. The files are 1. A brochure for announcing a forum, 2. A one-page descriptive flyer, 3. Instructions for organizing a forum, 4. A sample agenda, 5. A registration form, 6. A 10-point list of contemporary social issues to stimulate thoughtful preparation in advance of the forum, and 7. A brief, about 3 minutes, PowerPoint presentation that can be used by a moderator to introduce the forum. Let us begin the process of respectful, formal, civic discussions about our collective future. Making democracy work is an individual responsibility. The self-serving beliefs of those who now control and profit from the status quo will no longer do. The time to claim the future is now. Thank you for the day. No, it is not 1960, and I am not living in the past. It's nearly one half of a century later, and I am looking into the future. There's an urgency now to finish what was started then. It has taken another war, another replay of Vietnam, to bring us full circle. But this time, there is the absolute necessity of putting into practice what was then seen as the exuberance of idealistic youth. Well, it's no longer youthful idealism. It is our new reality for both the youth and the adults of today. Either we embrace fundamental economic, political, social, and personal change, or we will forfeit our collective future. The youth and the adults of today have common cause for a cross-generational commitment, a commitment by the youth to lay claim to a viable future, a commitment by adults to revisit the idealism of their past, this time for actually creating a sustainable future. What an exciting time to be alive.